Okay, we're going to begin by the Mishnah on Mem Amud Aleph. So, Mafkid Perot Etz Chavero. It's a person who gives over produce to his friend to wash. Then there is a certain amount of expected deterioration of the fruits that he's giving over to him, and those can be removed from what he returns. L'chitim ula ores, when it comes to wheat and rice, Tisha chatzei kabin l'kur. And we take out 9 half kabin per kur. So kur is 30 sa'ah. Each sa'ah is 6 kabin. So if you take that, it's 180 kabin per kur. So that would be 2.5% of the amount. That would be the expected loss. 9 halves, 4.5 per 180. All right, so the seorim for barley, the dochenim for millet, tish'a kabin l'kur, there'd be 9 kabin to the kur, which is 5% loss rate. Yeah, that's why the Mishnah probably used tish'a chatzei kabin in the first half, even though it could have just said 4.5 kabin, is because of the second member, which is tish'a kabin, so just to keep it. The kusmin, ulzera pishtan, when it comes to spelt and zera pishtan, the seeds of flax seeds, Shlosha in the kur. There we take 3 sa'in per kur. Hakol lefi amida, hakol lefi azman. Now this is the yearly rate per kur of deterioration. That means that if we have more than one kur, we'd expect a higher rate of deterioration. And if we had longer duration, you'd also expect a higher level of deterioration. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, v'chi ma'ach pat lahen l'achbarin. I mean, if the whole problem here is the animals that come, and the rodents that come and eat the food, and that's what's causing part of the deterioration here. It doesn't matter, the quantity that is there is irrelevant with regards to how much they eat. I mean that the mice can only eat or consume a certain quantity of food, and just because you put more food there doesn't mean they're going to... It shouldn't be a relationship of a percentage. I mean, that there shouldn't be a ratio relationship, because otherwise that would assume that there are more and more mice. I mean, the truth might be that they're just, a certain number or quantity of mice, and they'll consume the same amount, whether you have a big pile or a small pile there. Ela eno yotzei lo chisronot, ela l'kor echad bilvad. That they only take out for one kur. I mean, that's the maximum amount that the mice will consume, is up to a kur, or the relationship to a kur. Beyond a kur, that's in excess of what the mice would consider eating. So the Chachamim's position here is not mentioned. The Tosfos brings the Chachamim from the Yerushalmi. What is their position from the Yerushalmi? Tosfos says is that because the mice happen to be very friendly, and therefore, these Hani Achbarai Rishayinu, and Karin Lechavreon, Dachlim Hum. They invite friends over to eat. I mean that if a mouse knows about it, it doesn't stand a chance of being one mouse or a couple of mice that are eating there. But rather, the more food, the more mice that show up, the more they're invited over. So there is a correlation between the amount of food and the number of rodents.
The longer the time, also more friends
come. Right, more friends come. It's a Rabbi Yehuda Omer, in my time be damuba. Once you reach a certain level, a certain quantity, we don't take out the loss because of the expansion of the produce here. We're going to see in the Gemara what that exactly means.
What's the background of the story?
Okay, so that's a problem, right? What's going on here? Very good. So that's exactly the Gemara's question. So the Gemara says, it's going to deal with another question, then I'll get to your question. Oreis tuvo chaser. What are you talking about? Rice deteriorates at a much faster rate than our Mishnah says, rather than 4.5 kabin per kor. Amar Rabba Bar Chana, Rabbi Yochanan, ba'orez kaluf shani. In our Mishnah, we're talking about orez that's already peeled, that's already shelled. Right, so orez that is shelled, right, that deteriorates at a slower rate. But if it's orez with its klipa on it, then it would deteriorate at a faster rate. L'kus min ulzera pishtan gimel sayin l'kor. When we're talking about the deterioration rate over here, which is gimel sa'in l'kur, we're only talking about when it is zera pishtan begivalin, when they're still in the shaft, still in the stalks, because then they dry out, and when they dry out, they deteriorate, and then the wind blows them away, meaning that there's loss just because of the drying out of the givalin. Where it says, Tanya Nami Ochi, we have a brace that supports that, the Kusmin Lazer Pishtan Begivolin. That here it explicitly says not Zer Pishtan, but Zer Pishtan Begivolin. And then it also adds the Orez Shenu Kaluf. And for Orez, it's not Kaluf, Shlosha Sayin the Kur. There'll be three Sayin the Kur. So when it comes to Orez, we have the Unshel Kur is three Sa'ah per Kur instead of before what we were saying, which was 4.5 Kav per Kur. So this is a significantly higher deterioration rate. And that's because the shells are on it versus the Mishnah, which is talking about a case of shelled rice. Now, Kol Defi Umidah. So what does it mean, Kol Defi Umidah? Tana, Kain, the whole Kur B'Kur, V'Chein L'Chol Shana V'Shana. The Midah means, well, we're giving you, the Mishnah is giving you the rate per year per Kur. So now if you just calculate beyond that, you calculate how much per year, and then how many years was it there, and or what percentage of the year was it, and how many Kurim are there, and that'll give you the deterioration rate. Tanya, Amar Lo Rabbi Yochanan, Harve Ovdot Mehen, Harve Mitpazrot Mehen. So the Chachamim said to Rabbi Yochanan, okay, fine, we don't agree about the fact that mice have friends and come over. You think they don't, we think they do. But nevertheless, even according to your opinion, when you have large quantities of grain or large quantities of produce, what ends up happening when it gets moved around, when it's lost, people are less makpid on small losses. So therefore, it does get lost. Pieces get lost, amounts get lost. There is a certain amount of chisaron that happens in the produce. So Tana, Bamed, Devarim Amur, Kesi Yoshi Irvam, in Perotav. Right, so that he mixed them in with his own perot. Avad Yichad Lokeren Zavit, but if he had designated a specific location, Umadho, Arishocha, Lufanecha. And then he says, take Kichirvan in Perotav, my Havi. So even when he mixes them up in his own perot, why does that make a difference? Meaning that if there is deterioration, then there should be a ratio of deterioration. And then you just say, if you have a core here, and you have a core here, then we just take whatever's left over and split it in half. I mean, that we know how much each of us put in there, so we can always just take out that ratio in the end. So that's your question, David, is what are we talking about? What's the situation here where we're talking about deterioration? If we're talking about a stam case, he gave you fruits and vegetable wash, then you take it back and say, why do we have to worry about chisaron? Now, even if you mix them with your, and store them with your own produce, it shouldn't make a difference because you entered a certain amount of produce, they gave you a certain amount of produce. Whatever that ratio is to start with will also be the return ratio. So it shouldn't matter. I mean, if the 50% belongs to you, 50% to them, that's what you do in the end. So the Yisqitzer won't be dependent on that. So when it says, let's say, the day, Kamiyavin. So let's just look how much he has, and then we'll give you back whatever the difference is. So when it says, Mistabik Behen. There's a case where the Balabait is using them, and he's actively taking out of the pile. So when it says, let's say, Kamiyistabik. Just check how much he took. Based on how much he took, we'll reduce his amount by that, and then we'll know that percentage. Right? Says, he doesn't know how much he's taken out. So basically, the Mishnah is giving us a case where it's unknown how much the deterioration was for this particular amount. He gave you a core, and you maybe put in a core. During the year, you started to take out from that. You don't know how much you took out. So now we're left with a certain amount. We don't know how to divide that up. So if we want to give back to this individual his core, we look at this, we say core minus, here's the relative or relevant deterioration rate for that produce, and that's how much you give back to him because you're unable to calculate exactly how much is his and say, Harish Lechal Lefanecho.
You're not
doing it with
Chachila? Huh? Someone gives you some.
Or you say, you think that you really are obligated to keep track of.
So I don't know what the default is. I mean, your question is, what's the default situation? The default situation must be that he might have to keep them separately. And he ended up, the guy says, okay, you can put them together, store them with your stuff.
Maybe you got a special.
Right, so that's either a special mission, or, I don't know if
he doesn't have the facility to keep those separate. Right. This is his store, this is where he can keep them.
Right, so I don't know if that's the other way, or the default is that people always mix them. That was the expectation when you're mafkid that everybody does that. Unless you specify otherwise, then you don't have to separate them. I'm not sure which is the default scenario, but obviously there is a possibility that it comes to this where they are mixed together. Right? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, in my top. So what is that? If it's a large quantity, then you don't have to worry about these chisronot. Why is that? Kama midav ruba. What does it mean that when it's excessive? What does that mean? Amar Rav Bachana Rav Yochanan asara kurin. The midav ruba is 10 kur. Tani nami ochi. We have a brace that supports that. Kama midav ruba. What is this excessive amount? What is this tremendous amount? It's asara kurin. That is 10 kur. Why does 10 kur matter? So I'll finish the next part of the Gemara, and then we'll understand. We can come back and understand what this 10 core issue is. There was a brisa that was being learns in front of Rav Nachman Med, my Mamurim, they call for the Mishnah here, or this position Rav Yehuda, Shemadot lo mitoch gorno. That's if he measures it out of his gorin, right out of the threshing area or the storage area. Ve'achzir lo mitoch gorno. And then he also returns it from the threshing or storage area. Va'madad lo mitoch gorno. If he measured it out of the gorin. And ve'achzir lo mitoch beito. And then he returns it from his house. Right, and you say then you don't have to deduct anything because they expand. So now, what's the situation here? So the Havamino, or the way that this person was learning before Rav Nachman explained the Brisa right now, is that there are two different measures. There's a measure that's done at the Goren, and there's a measure that's done in the house. And the measure of a Kor in the Goren is different than the measure of the Kor, the household Kor versus what they call the wholesale Kor. There are different sizes. So if a person is mafkid with you at the Goren, and then you return it to him at the Goren, then you can take out chisvanot. But if he's mafkid with you at the Goren, and then you return him from the house measurement is smaller. So since the house measurement is smaller, the core of the house is smaller, you've already taken out chisvanot because you're actually giving it back. If he gave you three core at the Goren, and then you measure it at the Goren level, and then when you return it to him, you're measuring at the bite level and giving back three core, then you basically give him back less than he gave to you. So you've already taken out the chisronot, so there is no more additional chisronot. So Amalei, so Rav Nachman said back to him, Bechiv Shuchdani Eskinen. Are we talking about fools here? Which guy is going to go allow you to be mafkid with you at a larger, you know, rate? And then come back to you and say, oh, sure, you pay me back the lower measurement. Makes no sense. Why would anybody ever allow this to happen? So he says, Deyoyi bi bikailo rabo, bishokli bikailo suta. Who's going to ever give at the higher measurement or a larger quantity and then accept it back at the lower quantity? So that's what this person's doing. He's going to be mafkid at the higher rate and then taking it back at the lower rate. Doesn't make any sense. So he says, Dilma b'mot gorin kamart. Maybe when you learned this bright so you learned it really not as gorin itself, but b'mot gorin, at the time of the gorin. But maybe the way my mom says, I would explain it. Shemadad lo b'mot gorin, v'gzir lo b'mot gorin. If he gave it to him, he's mafkid with him at the time of the gorin, and he returns to him at the time of the gorin. If he measured it for him at the time of the Goren, and then he returns it in the Gshamim during the winter season, right into the spring, then you don't remove any deterioration, because they expand. Right, so this is the issue, and this is really what Rabbi Yehuda is after also, which is that if the time of the Goren is very dry, the dry season, and the dry season is hot and dry, everything shrinks. I mean, that there's everything is tightly packed and it's shrunk. Once you go into the rainy season, when humidity builds up and it gets colder, the items expand, right, because they're not dried out as much. They start to take on, right, some moisture and humidity, and they expand during the Bimot HaGshamim. So when you go back and measure him during the Bimot HaGshamim, the same quantity of a kur contains less amount of the item that he gave to you because they've expanded. So that expansion offsets the chiseron that's there. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda is explaining over here. Rabbi Yehuda says, once you reach the level of 10 kor, right, then the expansion of the volume of the item that you've been mafkid makes up for the chiseron that would have happened over that period of time. So that's at 10 kor. The question is, what happens between, let's say, a kor and 10 kor? I mean, that it's clear that Rabbi Yehuda believes 10 kor is a large amount that makes up for the chiseron. It's clear that Chachamim believe a kor already is at that level of chiseron. Rabbi Yehuda, what happens between 10 and 1? I mean, what's his position? Tosfos mentions over here, V'yesh lomar, V'diyud korin olo lehem nanafuch chisaron shel kor achad. V'lo yitzi lehem chisaron, Einu kol chisaron shel kor achad. V'zi, lohachi nakad yud korim nafuch mipachot. So Tosfos says that comes to exclude less. I mean, that the expansion only equals the deficit that is created of that period of time when you're up at 10 kor. Right, but a Beis or a Gimel Korim, even though it expands, it doesn't add up. It won't offset the Chisaron, and therefore we don't say, don't pay out the Chisaron. The Tosfos seems to think it's limited to 10 Kor, that it makes that expansion. Others believe that there's a ratio, I mean that between a Kor and 10 Kor, you will have more and more expansion, and less Chisaron to make up for. So there is some sort of relationship between the expansion volume and the Chisaron that's there. And therefore, you'll have to measure against, right, depending on how much you get to. Two or three core, you have to decide what you think. The other possibility, and the last possibility, is that Rav Yehuda believes up to two and three core doesn't matter. I mean, one core, two, three core doesn't matter. beyond 2, 3, and 4, then it starts to matter. The expansion starts to matter, and that'll matter up to 10, 4. At 10, 4, it clearly covers the amount, and then it won't matter at that point. Now, I'm going to ask a big, basic question. I'm like, above the bayit. If that's the case, that we where this expansion of produce happens, right? Why don't we worry about the fact that the barrels or the storage units will explode? I mean, that's the famous ice, right? If you fill up a water bottle to the top and then put it in the freezer, it explodes. Why? Because ice is expanded, it's greater, and it has greater density and size than water, and therefore it breaks it. So if you fill up all your produce into tightly packed containers, then why doesn't it happen that when we reach the Bimot HaGshamim that we all suddenly see barrels or the storage units start to explode or break because of the expansion? So how about that's one. Yes, that's what happened. That's true. That's exactly what happens. So you have to be careful. You have to leave space. Just like in a water bottle you freeze, you have to leave space. So it's over here, you have to leave space for it to expand it. The other possibility is the way they store it. When they store it, it's stored under pressure. Because either, in two ways to read it, it's stored under pressure, either because each container that it's in places pressure on it, or the other possibility is that when you have multiple barrels on top of each other, so there's a large amount of storage and pressure on top of it, it doesn't allow the barrel to explode because there's external pressure that's holding in either, in two ways to formulate it, either external pressure is holding in the tevuah that's inside of it, or the other barrels around it. The way it's stored puts external pressure on the barrel so they don't break.
So that's not barrel storage.
Right, okay, so the top barrel should be exposed, but
it's the ceiling.
Which is what the or that because of the in the way they store it in the location, I mean, it's not just the barrels on top of each other, but in the location they squeeze them in. Right? There's a certain height, a certain width, and they're squeezing them in, so even the top barrels have that pressure or that offset so they don't expand.
It could be that if they're stored in a grain silo that the weight of the grain itself that's on the top. Pressure is great.
Right, that's a possibility. Right. I didn't see that, but it makes a lot of sense that the other pressure, any type of pressure should offset the expansion. We mentioned above that Rabbi Yochanan's shita is only up to a core. Right, so the question for Rabbi Yochanan is below a core what happens, that's what we mentioned before the Tosfos. That was asked when you talk about a core, for Rabbi Yochanan, he says that the quantity of mice is always the same. The quantity of mice is always the same there, then it should be relevant. According to Rabbi Yochanan, it's relevant above a core, but it should also be relevant less than a core, because they're always eating the same amount. So you should get, even under a core, according to Rabbi Yochanan, you should get the same percentage as it would be for a core at 1 year level, because they're going to eat the same amount no matter what. So Tosfos says that he thinks that no, that even with less than a core, Rabbi Yochanan is going to agree that you reduce the percentage, or you not reduce, but it'll stay as a percentage, not as a fixed amount, because there's less space, again, in the storage area, there's less space in the storage area for the mice to hide out, there's less available space for that many mice to get in. So we'll reduce the number of mice when you go down to a lower number. And he says, he says you still have to take out the percentage because it's going to be a loss, at least some loss, and therefore that ratio will be relevant. Right? New Mishnah. When it comes to wine, you take out 1/6. Right? So you take out about a little 16 2/3%, about 17%. If you don't marry, chomesh, take out a fifth, about 20%. There's a 20% loss rate at wine. It's pretty amazing. Right? You'll see low shlosha lugim shemen lemeya. When it comes to oil, you lose about 3 lug per 100. Right? So 3%. Logumechsa shmarim. Logumechsa bala. The loss, the 3 lug loss has to do with 1.5 is the shmarim themselves. Meaning that the oil that has, originally when it's stored, has sediment in it. That sediment settles over time. And if you're giving back oil, you're measuring out the oil that you're giving back, and you're giving back oil that is zakuk, right, which is pure, clear oil, then you've lost 1.5 lug that are just the sediment that settled at the bottom. And number two is you lose a log mechsa because over time the oil is absorbed into the barrels. Right? It means absorbed, wherever they're stored, some of that oil gets absorbed into with the storage container. So the Gemara says
it's the same thing with the wine.
That is a question. The Rishonim disagree about what the story is with wine. We're going to see in a second, the Gemara is going to address wine. And the question is, what's the relationship between wine and oil? Do they have the same questions about sediment, or do they have the same absorption questions? Right, so now, if logumechsa, so that means you have 3%, 1.5% of it is the sediment, 1.5% is the absorption into the walls. Now, ima yashemen zukak, right, if it's clear oil, eno yutzilo shmarim, then there's nothing to talk about sediment. So 1.5% goes away because there is no sediment here. Right? But on the other hand, 1.5% remains, which is the absorption into the walls. Right? If they were old barrels, then you lose the other 1.5% because it's already absorbed. The walls have already absorbed, and there's no more room for absorption, so therefore you're not going to have that loss. So if you have old barrels with clear wine, clear oil, then there's nothing to take out. There's no loss over here. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Afa Mocher Shemen, Mizukak L'Chaviro, even if someone's selling clear oil to his friends, Kol Yimot HaShana, all year round, and say, Mekabel Olav Lofum Echsa Shmarim L'Meya. This person accepts a differential in the quantity that he's buying of 1.5 for the Shmarim. We'll have to see what that means. And now, Kolo Pligei. Kolo Pligei means the first two opinions in our Mishnah, which say that it's a Shtut or a Chumesh. They're not arguing. Right? It's a Marki Atre or Marki Atre. It has to do with where they lived. But Atre Demar, Chafu Bikira, has to do with how they sealed the barrels. If they sealed it with, it seems to be wax, over here they lined it or sealed it with wax, then it doesn't absorb so much. Right, and by Rabbi Yehuda, it says it's a chomesh, chafu b'kufra, right there they use some sort of pitch, right, as the internal seal. And umayitz tfei, and therefore it absorbs more. So the 16 2/3% is when they did it with the wax, and the 20% is when they did it with the pitch. Has to do with the type of earth that they used to create the klicheres that held the oil, whatever the materials, the raw materials that were used. Right, so that is when they had in their cities, the type of material, raw material, was slightly different. And because it was different, it absorbed more or less based on the raw materials that they used to make the containers. Now, but actually, the Rabbi Yehuda, in the city of Rabbi Yehuda, Ramu Arbaim Vitamni Kuze Vidano, that they used to sell a dana used to contain 48 kuza. A dana is a chavit, right? Within a chavit, there used to be these 48 kuze, which is a smaller container or pitcher's worth. I mean, that there's, you could fit in 48, if you poured 48 kuze, you would end up with a dana. Azal dana b'shita zuze. And a dana sold for 6 zuz. Right? So that's 48 kuze come out of a 6 zuz worth of dana. So that would be over 48, which is, right, 1/8. So it would be 1/8 of a zuz per kuze. Right now, Paris Rabbi Yehuda broke it down. Either, it's not clear here if he was a retailer himself or he's paskening for other retailers. It sounds like he was the retailer himself. Paris Rabbi Yehuda, shita b'zuzah. Rabbi Yehuda started to sell the kuzes at six to a zuz. Right, so he'd sell 6 kuze at 1 zuz. So if you take that, and now you want, if you want to earn back your money, right?
2 kuz per.
Right. So here you have, if you just take it back, you tell you, if I take six times that he sold kuze, he would make back the 6 zuz that he paid for the dana. So that would leave over 36 kuze, he'd make his money back. At 36 kuze, he's made 6 zuz, and that would pay for the dana. Now he has an excess of, right, of 12 extra kankani, extra kuze that are left. So dao flate b'shita. So you take out 36 at 6. Pashulei treisak. Now he has 12 left over. Now if he has left 12 left over, now what's really left for him? Dao tamnya. Take away 8. Shtute. 8. Why? Because we said before that wine deteriorates at 1/6, at the rate of 1/6. So if I take 1/6 of 48, I have 8. So 8 have gone because we're gonna lose 8 over the year because of the deterioration. Pashaluhu Arba. He's left over with 4 kuze. Right, so he's left over with these 4 kuze. And when he's left over with
assume that he doesn't sell any more, yeah.
Things like here that you take it.
And
what you do is you take it at the goren, at the time of the goren. Nobody sells wine there because it's not fermented yet. You have to wait anyway for a year. So he's buying it at the goren level at the dana per zuz, and then he's reselling it later on.
Or the barrel itself absorbs what it's going to absorb in a less amount of time.
Right.
Because once it's kind of saturated, it's going to absorb. It's not necessarily, you know, even distribution.
Which is the other question, which you asked before, which is, what are we worried about here in terms of wine? Is wine only absorption, or is it also shmarim? And we don't know what the exact. Right, whatever it is, it seems to have that it was assumed that he was going to lose 8. Right, 8 out of here that he's going to. So here he used up 36 out of the 36 kuze. He used up to make his money back to break even, Right? There's another 8 kuzeh he's going to lose to, right? The 8 kuzeh he's going to lose to the deterioration of the wine, whatever it is, whether it's bala, it's being absorbed, or whether it's being the shmarim. What he's left over with now is 4 kuzeh. Right now, when he's left over with 4 kuzeh, right, what is he going to sell that for? We said that was shita bzuza, and that he sells 6 at a zuz. So the 4 left is he's going to get less than a zuz for that amount, right? He's going to get less than a zuz for that. V'amar Shmuel. So Shmuel says, "Mistaker, aistaker, yoter al shtut." Someone wants to make a profit. Don't make a profit more than a sixth. You're entitled to make a profit of 1/6 because of what we call ono. Right? So when it's dvarim sheish mehem chayin nefesh, when it comes to things as Rashi says that are chayin nefesh, right? Then we allow you up to a shtut to make a profit. More than that, we don't let you make a profit. Meaning we're dealing with ona. Ona is above ishtut, and above is ona. Below ishtut is not classified as ona. So therefore over here, we don't understand what Rabbi Yehuda did. Rabbi Yehuda here is making less than a zuz for 6 zuz that he's investing. He invests 6 zuz to buy a dano, and his profit back is less than a zuz. That means he's making less than a sixth. Now if he permits you to make a profit up to a sixth, why wouldn't he make the full profit? Why is he taking a subpar profit or return on this number? The underlying assumption here is that he could have sold it for more money. That's what Tosa says. That he could have actually made more money here. That he could have sold it at a higher price.
It's not even a shtut, because it's not the going price. It's the going price if you buy 48, you buy a smaller amount.
Okay, so that's a question, right? Of course, that's one question. And second of all is, but he's even below that. I mean, he's not even making a sixth at the wholesale rate. Mm-hmm. Right? He's not even making there, so he can make it more. Mar says, Ikei gulfei ushmariya. So Christ says, don't worry about that because he's doing it himself. He's also Gufe and Shmaria. What is that? He gets to keep the Kankan and he gets to keep the Shmarim. I mean that, fine, he's selling pure oil here. And when he sells that to pure oil, at the end, when he bought the Dano, he bought the 96 Zuz, he keeps the Dano, number one. And number two, he keeps all the Shmarim there at the bottom because we already took out a loss rate that he's going to have. So he's got right the 8, so he's going to keep the shmarim at the bottom plus the dana. So where it says, mm-hmm. Then you're way in excess of a shtut. That means he's making his profits are far in excess of a shtut here. So Ika, so where it says, no, there's an offset to that, which is tarche v'dame barzenaita. Meaning that what? There's his labor. I mean, he has to charge something for his labor here. The labor doesn't come free when he's selling it. And number two is dame barzenaita. Dame barzenaita, there are two possibilities. One is the probably that he has to pay for advertising. He has to pay for advertising. Advertising costs him money. So that he has to also deduct out of the profit. Or, barzenaita comes from the beres. It's the tap. You have to, when you buy the dana, you have to put a tap into the dana in order to have the oil, in order to take the oil out of it. And that requires an expert to come in and put in the tap. And you have to pay somebody to put in the tap each time for the barrel. And that costs you money also. So that's deducted from the profit. So Gemara says that basically you have an offset. To the dana and the gufa, you have an offset of his tarchev, his labor, and either advertising or putting in the tap. And those will offset, and therefore he will come out to about a shtut. He'll come out about a sixth of a profit. He'll make a zuz per sixth that he invests. The Gemara is basically saying, and that's, we're going to see it. We're not really dealing with ona here. I wanted to give you a little flavor for it, but we're not really dealing with ona over here. But the Gemara basically qualifies and says that when we talk about ona, shtut, and all these items, that has to do with what we call a buyer-seller. I mean, that person who's just buying and selling commodities, he has no tirka in it, and he has no involvement with the item. If he just buys, it's a seer store, right? He's a middleman. All he has is buy and sells right away, and therefore, when he buys and sells, we say a sixth. There's no deduction that's chosen, no deduction for overhead, there's no deduction for any input or advertising that you do. Once you involve someone who has to invest in order to resell the item, then we allow that as a deduction, those costs to be a deduction against the profit, so that your profit is in excess of those costs or outlays that you have in order to sell it. The only question is, and this is something, it's not clear from this Gemara, is what is the din of ona? You know, the din of ona is that you may not overcharge another person. The Gemara lays out that when you don't overcharge a person, it has to do with the sixth. The sixth is the threshold. Above a sixth, everybody agrees that that's ona, and then you have to return the item, the mechach is batel. Right? At a sixth, right, then we say that the mekach stands, but you have to return the sixth. Below a sixth, right? The din is that is that's the question. What happens below a sixth? Below a sixth, we say the mekach is kayam, you don't have to return it. What question is why don't you have to return it less than a sixth? So most people say like David is saying, which is it's a din in michila. That less than a sixth, people are mochel because It's just not a large enough amount that people expect that, and therefore they're mochel. But when they're mochel, what does that mean? There are actually two issues when you have onan. One issue is the hashabah, the returning of the money itself, right? And the number two is that you violate the issur of lotonu, right? You violate the issur of not doing onan, not overcharging. When we say that less than a sixth, when we say that that is, there's mechila there, does that mean that you don't have to return it, plus there's no issur? Below a sixth, there's no issur at all? Or are we saying that it means mutal legamrei? Or do we say, no, that less than a sixth is still asur because you're overcharging, but there's still, you don't have to return it because there's mechila with regards to the amount of money. So the rush over here, the rush in the fourth parak, again, we'll get to it, the rush is miklabeit, he is a safek about these two sides. Listen to this, the rush here. He says, the Rachmana amar otonu b'chol davar sheish bo shivui mamon. Right, that's anything that has monetary value. Yisira tarash lo yanet chaveiro. El shamru chachamin. Da'ad shtut habi mechila. Like David suggested, right? Until the shtut is forgiven. V'fi shekach derach mechach u'memkar. That's the way commerce works. V'fi shelokeach mocher inam yucholim lekavein d'beya mechach b'tzimtzum. You can never be exact about it. People will differ, always differ, about the value of an object. To one person, to another person, even when you're talking about experts in Shuma, you're going to have some sort of differential between them. If you bring in two parties to assess something, they're not going to come to the same number. There's going to be some differential. That differential is up to a sixth. That's what we consider to be that. And because of that, the world doesn't consider that to be ona'ah, because that's considered to be within the reasonable amount of mistake that a person makes. Even if he comes to it, right, if you bring two assessors in, two assessors are going to come up with a number that's different. So even if you come and complain that he overcharged you, there's no, even if you come, we bring in two assessors, they're not going to come and say, oh, you're right or you're wrong, because there's a normal differential that's there. That is, there's no questioning, there is no ir-ur over here. One of the parties knows better how much it's worth. Shouldn't overcharge one or the other. Unless you tell them that you are, right, unless you explain to him that this is the value I'm giving, I'm charging a little more than the value. Right, so
but he still calls it onah, he doesn't call it revach.
Right, as he calls it. Now the other possibility in the rush is Shema keva the derech mekach u'memkar bekach. Since this is a normal business transaction, lefamim elokeach chafetz mekach zeh u'mosif alav damim. You're taking tei shavyot. Upamim shemercher mezalzel b'shamuto b'makaro lefi shein chafetz zeh arev alav. Right, it's oshu dachuk lemaot. Hukach ad shtut abi bichlal dmei mekach bein kan shem una klal. Then there's no one else. Well,
this is still not our case.
So you say that it's not our case. Right, so that's a possibility. The question is, what is our case over here? The question is, why are you allowed to profit over up to a shtut? I mean, then why does Shmuel have a statement that you're allowed to profit up to a shtut? Then the Ramban, that's all an imposition of the Chachamim. The Torah says, don't overcharge. Chamin imposed what is the levels of charging. As Avalazarat Halav Mohekit Kukulan says that the lav applies no matter what. Even when you charge less than a shtus, more than a shtus, if you overcharge, the lav is always in place. The bonah is always in place. So now you have to explain over here what's going on with Shmuel's statement. Shmuel's statement here that there is, right, that you're allowed to be marviach, ajstus. Where does this come from? Where does this concept of ajstus come from? If you say it's a derivative of onah, that the question is that you can't overcharge. Overcharging means including profit, meaning that we allow you to make a profit, but we don't allow you to overcharge. Then you'd have to, really explain the concept of the rush that says that that's normal business. Normal business between people is that we agree that there's a certain differential in our understanding. There's a certain amount of profit that you're allowed to make here, and therefore up to a sixth is considered not even isur. That is permitted the gamrei, it's mutar. On the other hand, right, if you believe that up to a shtus is asur, like the Ramban, and the other tzad in the rush, to believe that it's always asur, even if you overcharge by less than a shtus, even though you don't have to return it because it's mechila, nevertheless, you still violate the isur. Then you have to explain over here that this is not overcharging, and that this is the expected return that you're allowed. I mean, that the government mandates, like when the government regulates an industry, they say to you that a fair return is, so when you charge the customers for this product, you're allowed to charge your costs plus a certain revenue, a certain percentage. So basically that's what the Chachamim say, is that you can charge, you know, 1 1/6 is considered to be a fair profit. Beyond that is not considered excess profit. Excess profit you're not allowed to charge, and that might be enough because you're overcharging, not because you're overcharging by a sixth, but you're overcharging, period. You violate it. Once you reach over the excess revach, that's when you enter into ona, because then you're overcharging. The market price is the with the profit included. And then above the market price already, then you're into areas of ona. The two possibilities, meaning that is this a derivative ona, then you have to be, then it has to be according to the shittot, the thing up to a sixth is not an issue. All right, but according to the law, if it's not a derivative ona, then you just have to say that it's a, they made it a profit cap or regulated profit on chayei nefesh, things that people buy on an everyday basis. You're entitled to a certain amount of profit, and next is that profit, that's when you enter into ona. And then why didn't Rabbi Yehuda at least earn up to his allocated profit? All right.
You say there were two pshatim. One is a sixth over the market costs, and one is it focuses on a specific company, and it's a sixth
what
over
is the actual profit margin.
Does anybody say that
it's subjective versus objective? You're saying.
Yeah. Does anybody make
right, it could be. I don't. I assume that they have an objective rate here. All right. But im hayashem zukagin yitzilo shmarim b'ha if shaklo bala. I mean, of course, even if you have a new, an old barrel, it has to absorb some. There's some loss to the barrel. So I remember Nachman Zufafim Shanu. Talking about the case where they are Zufafim, meaning that they're pitch on the inside, because the pitch on the inside, once the pitch absorbs, it doesn't absorb anymore. Came there is. That is the case. Once the barrel has absorbed it completely, it just doesn't take any more in. It doesn't, there is no more loss of Balea. And when you sell and you go into the store to buy shemen, when you buy it, you accept on yourself a certain amount of loss for the shemarim. What is that? When you explain the dibur of Yehuda, mutar l'arev shemarim. According to Yehuda, you're allowed to take the barrel. Somebody comes in to buy shemen from you. All the sediments at the bottom of the barrel. You're allowed to go in there, mix up the barrel with the shemarim, and then give him his, sell it to him. The dibur chachamim asur l'arev shemarim. According to Chachamim, you can't do that. You have to just open up the tap and give him the oil. Why? The Dibur Rabbi Yehuda Mutar L'Arev Shmarim. Rabbi Yehuda let him mix in the sediment. Behind the time at the Makabel. And that's why he says to him, listen, you have to keep. Even if I give you pure oil, I'm going to give you, if you buy me from me 100 lug of pure oil, I'm only going to give you 98 and a half. That's all you're going to get from me. 98 and a half, and you're going to pay as if you're getting 100. Why? Because it's Mutar L'Arev. Because he can say to him, Damalei, Ibai L'Ruvelach, Milo Arvelach. I could have mixed it up. Before you came to buy it, I could have mixed it up. And then you would have gotten a 100 lug with 1.5 lug of shmarim in it. And in the end, you would have ended up with 98 and a half anyway. So why? I didn't mix it. So why should you get the 100? Now you should get your 98 and a half. That's it. So hashinami kavil. So now take it. So v'lei malei. So why doesn't the buyer respond to him and say, Yerav kalei, hava mizdabenli? He says, had you mixed it up, then I could resell it with the shmarim in it. I mean that when I have it, if you sell it to me with shmarim, I can resell it now with shmarim. Hashta mayavidle l'chudei. Right? What am I going to do with this? Now, if you say to me, I have 98 and a half lug of shemen, right? Lomizdamenli, I can't sell the 98 and a half as 100. Nobody's going to buy it off of me at 100 for the 98 and a half. Had I had the shmarim in a mix, then I could have sold it as 100 and I would get my 100 back also. But because you're giving me 98 and a half, now everybody else, when I go to sell the 98 and a half, they're going to say to me, listen, you're selling me 98 and a half. I'm not going to buy it from you at the price of 100. And also we're not going to do the shmarim. So Mara says, babalabaita skinan. So in a case where it's a balabaita, it's not a reseller that's buying it. It's actually a retail buyer that's coming in to buy it. The nechalei betzila, because he prefers to have clear, pure oil. I mean that he has no value in having the shmarim in the oil anymore. Because since he's not reselling it, having the shmarim in there is no benefit to him. All he needs is the pure oil. So if you sell him 100 with shmarim, or you sell him 98 and a half clear, he doesn't, to him it's the same thing. It doesn't matter because that's what he's going to get and that's what he's going to use. And since he's not reselling it, he doesn't need the quantity to be 100 versus 98 and a half. So he says, v'lei malei, why does he say to him, t'lo arvi, t'li, achuli, achalti? Says, wait, you didn't mix it up, so that means that you're mocha. I mean that if you mixed up the shmarim in there, and achanami, you would have been entitled to sell it to me that way. But the fact you didn't means that it's an implicit mechila. But the fact that you're selling to me without the shmarim is saying that you're mocha and you're going to give me the full amount. So Yehuda the tamei, the late mechila. Rabbi Yehuda is according to his own position that there is no implicit mechila over here. Tetnan, we have a Mishnah. Machar lo et tzemet, lo machar lo et bakar. If he sells him the yoke, right, of the animals, with the animals and their animals, and then he sells him the yoke. But he sells them at a price that's way in excess, right, of what the tzemet is. So the price is, the Mishnah says, and if he sold them a yoke, then you don't get the animals. You don't get the yoke. Doesn't matter how much you paid for each one of them. Even if it seems like an excessive rate for one of them, we don't say that there's, we assume there's mechila on the rest. The money, how much you pay, tells you. If you're paying for a yoke so much money that it makes no sense that anybody would pay that, that means that you're also buying the bakar. So ketzad, what's the case? Sell me your yoke for 200 zuz. A dabar yadua, shein a tzemet, 200 zuz. Nobody buys a tzemet for 200 zuz. That means what? That you bought the bakar as well. You're getting everything. There is no mechila here. Chamim ein adamim raya. The price is no right, is no proof. Right? It's because you could be mochel. You say to him, listen, the tzemet is really worth this. I'm buying for you. The rest is I'm giving to you as a gift. There's an implicit mechila over here because that's you quote unquote said you're going to buy a tzemet. If you buy a tzemet, you get more money. The rest is a gift. So that's why Chamim learned. Rabbi Yehuda says there's no implicit mechila over here. We assume that if you pay a lot of money, you're buying everything that's there. So too over here, that there is no mechila. There's no implicit mechila. Just because I'm giving to you the without the shmarim doesn't mean that I'm mochel you the shmarim over here. Now the divrei Chamim asur la'arev shmarim. According to Chamim, you're not allowed to mix in the shmarim once they've settled. By any time, lo makabel. And that's why according to Chamim, you can't give him 98.5. You have to give him 100. Why? Because you have no way now of selling him oil with shmarim in it. Because the shmarim already settled to the bottom, he wants 100 luk. When you tap out the 100 luk, you take it out of the barrel, all he's going to get is a pure 100 luk. And since you can't mix it, you're not allowed to charge him for the shmarim. So, because if you wanted to mix it up now, you couldn't do that. I don't accept it from you. I want 100 and I don't want 98.5. Rabbi says, I think just the opposite of what you're thinking about. I think the opposite is more logical. Why? According to the Chachamim, you're allowed to mix in the Shemarim behind the time to Loma Kabel. And that's why he doesn't accept less than 100. Damalei means lo avart le, achuli achadli. Right, that because you didn't mix it up means that you were mochel. That's the Chachamim, the Shittatam, that you are mochel when you overpaid. So he says, hey, you had the right to mix it. Since you didn't mix it, that's implicit mechila, and you have to give me a full 100. Dear Rabbi Yehuda, asur la'arev Shemarim. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you're not allowed to mix the Shemarim behind the time to Mekabel. Now, that's why it's accepted. Damalei, ibay la ruve lo shadali. He says, if I was allowed to mix in the shmarim, they wouldn't let me. Oh, so now you're not going to accept 90.5. You're going to take a 400, not 90.5. Zobin bezabin tagre ikre. What type of businessman am I? What type of retailer am I? If I am buying at one price with sediment, I'm selling to you without the sediment, and then I'm left with no profits over here. You know, I have to make a profit. The only way for me to make a profit is to sell it to you with the shmarim or to sell it with an equivalent price. So either I sell it to you with the shmarim in there, I can't do that because I'm not going to mix it. The only way for me to do that is to give you a smaller amount, to have you take a 1.5% off. Right, when I take off the 1.5%, then I'm at least making back my money, I'm making a profit. I'm not losing money by selling it to you without the shmarim in there. All right, Tana. Echad alokeach ve'echad amafkid lefektim, or the katim. Right, that a lokeach and a mafkid have the same din when it comes to pikatim. Now, pikatim are the you might as well explain it, are these garinim, the shells that float to the top of the oil. So, when it comes to pikatim, my pikatim, what does it mean? What is the din here that we're saying? Elam keich the lokeach lo makabel pikatim. Just like a buyer doesn't want this stuff that's floating on the top, mafkid nami lo makabel pikatim. Then the mafkid, when you return the oil to the person who gave it to you, you also take out the pikatim. Elam alei pikatcha ma'avidu. But if you're mafkid with me, then you can just say to him, listen, harisha chalafanecha. This is your oil, you gave it to me. Whatever floats to the top, you can have back. Why do I have to take out the pikatim? Ella, keheche de mafkid mekabel pikatim. No, the other way around. Just like the mafkid takes back pikatim, because that's his oil, right? And when you give it back to him, the pikatim that belongs to him. Okay, achnami mekabel pikatim. Also, the buyer, when he comes to it, he has to take the pikatim. It says, b'ri mekabel keach pikatim. Since when does the lokeach, a buyer, accept these pikatim, these shells of the top? Ba'atanya, don't we have a brisa? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo amru shemen akur, elo lemocher bilvad. Right, when we say, when it comes to shemen akur, that's only by mocher, by the seller. Shari lokeach, mekabel olav, lugumech seshmarim, below pikatim. So that's, when it comes to the mocher, when it comes to selling it, then when he sells it as shemen akur, right, then for the buyer, I mean the mocher, who was buying it originally, he can take it as a shem nakor. But when he goes to the buyer, the new buyers that are coming and taking this from him, then they already have accepted 1.5 lok deduction for the sediment. So if they're already taking a 1.5 deduction for the sediment, you're not going to also deduct the katim from them. And you can't take, it's almost like a double, you're taking a double deduction on them. So Gemara says, lokasha. So what's how come over here we're saying that the lokeach has to accept katim? And then in the other case we say lokeach, or the price that we bring down says that the lokeach does not have to accept the katim. Gemara says, lokasha, there's no question over here. Adi lovle zuzei, right, betishrei, because shakum in ebidisan. That depends when he pays for it and when he's taking it. So if he pays for it in Tishrei, right? Now when you get it in Tishrei, everything is mixed in, right? Because it's a kur. The shaman at the time of Tishrei is when the harvest, right? When you bring it in, when you press the oil, all the sediment, everything is mixed in, you get shaman a kur. Right? So if I paid for you money in Tishrei, the shaman that you buy in Tishrei is at a cheaper price. Right, so now, because shakum in ebi nisan committed the Tishrei, and then you take it in Nisan, like it was in Tishrei. Ha, the ayvelei zuz ebi nisan, right, now, other cases where I buy it in Nisan, because shakum in ebi nisan committed the Nisan, and I'm paying for it, I'm trying to get it back in Nisan, like the midah of Nisan. If I pay in Nisan, I'm paying the higher rate. When I pay the higher rate, I'm expected to get clear oil, because at the time of Nisan, the sediments have settled to the bottom of the barrels. And when I'm buying it, I took off 1.5 already for the sediment that you're losing. But on the other hand, I don't expect there to be any other mixes, any other picatim found in the oil. So it has to do with when you buy, right, when you buy the oil. So the akirat picatim is the problem of the loss of the picatim is all to the mocher. When do we say the katim loss is all to the mocher and not to lokeach? That's when you're buying in Nisan. When you're buying in Nisan, there's an expectation that I'm buying clear oil. I already took a deduction of 1.5 for the sediment. So there, that's it. Everything, I should get clear oil with no katim. Whereas if I buy it in Tishrei, when I buy it in Tishrei, I'm buying at a cheaper price. Why am I buying it at the cheaper price? Because I expect that it's dirty, then it's all mixed up, it's a kurin. So now if you come to me in Nisan and I say, okay, give me clear oil, that's not what you paid for in Tishrei. When I paid for, when you come in Nisan, you're going to have to get what you paid for in Tishrei, which is Shemina Kurim. In that case, you're going to have to accept it with the katim in it. All right, we'll just do the Mishnah, and then we'll continue with the sugya tomorrow. Mafki chavit etzel chavero, velo yichdala balim makom. So in person, he gives a chavit to his friend, and he doesn't designate a place for it. Right? The Totula Minishpura. Then he picks it up, he moves it. It's not in a designated location, he picks it up, then he moves it. Imitoch Yadon Nishpura. If it falls out of his hands, the Tzorcho, if he was moving it for his own benefit, meaning the Balabai is moving it for his own benefit, the person who's watching, the Shomer falls out, Chayav. The Tzorcho, if he was moving it because the barrel was in a place where it was going to get damaged or something was going to happen to it, then you're Patur. Imishenicha Nishpura. If after you put it back down, it breaks, ben the tzorcho, ben the tzorcha patur. Right, whether it's for his tzorech or the tzorcha, then you are patur. Yichdu la ba'mnei makom. On the other hand, if there was a designated place where it was, v'tiltula v'nishpura, if you picked it up and it breaks, ben mitoch yado, ben mishenicha, right, the tzorcho, ben mishenicha, the tzorcho chayav, doesn't matter when you picked it up, or when you put it down, if it was for your own benefit, your chayav, the tzorcha, again, for its benefit, then you would be patur. Right, we have to discuss here, this is a sugi that we had before, which is dat balim. What do you need dat balim in these instances? And when you return it, why is it qualified? Why is it changed? And that's what the Gemara is going to deal with tomorrow.